certified room. All right. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalker meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is approximately 1:30, Monday, March 10th. We're meeting for a work session containing three different case numbers, PU 13793, 794, 795, 796. What I'm anticipating is we'll go until about, well, we'll go until we're done, or 225, whatever comes first. And then if we're still rolling at close to 2:30, we'll have to start to schedule another one because we have another work session immediately following at 2:30. So I don't have any opening comments, but I'd open it up to Commissioner Christman or Fedorchak if they have any.
I'll just save opening comments, I guess, for part of the dialogue.
All right, Julie?
I don't have any opening comments either, other than I'd like to wrap up by 2:30 if we can.
Yeah, we will, for sure. So let's start it up. I guess trying to think of the best way to do this. I don't know that we really have this in any one person's portfolio, since it's the first time we've done this before. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I was thinking about, and I'm sort of in the discussion. I guess maybe what I'd see, ask if either Randy or Julie has any thoughts. Randy, you sound like you might have some thoughts you wanted to start with, so maybe unless you have something, Julie, start with your thoughts, Randy.
Okay. In the process of the work session or whatever discussion we've had on this before, one of the things that was brought up that really caught my attention, and I guess to step back farther from that, I mean, I'll just be up front. I really believe that we need some kind of financial assurances on these wind turbines that are speckled throughout a big portion of the state already. But one of the points that came up, and I don't remember who the representative of what company it was that brought it up, and it had to do with, it had to either be coming from Basin Electric or Minn Kota with their, you know, one or two unit farms, if you can call that a farm. And the fact that, you know, there's not really a lot of economy of scale to calculating what the reclamation costs would be on that. And so I was looking at the list. I don't know where this list exactly came from. It's something I probably got from Jerry way back a long time ago. Well, it was printed in June, a list of all of our wind farms, our individual units. And, you know, there's not only those two Minn Kota sites and then the one basin site with two turbines that are real small like that. There are also a number of other very small farms or single turbine units at the reservations, and some that are associated with schools, and one at the Sacred Heart Monastery. And so there's a number of these one and two unit groupings, and I thought there was a three, but I can't find it on here now, so whether there is or not. And then after that, it jumps up to 13 or 14 units. And it seems to me that's when we start developing an economy of scale. And, you know, in the instance of a single unit facility, if in the worst case scenario, if that ceased to operate and people found paperwork methods of walking away from it, you know, one setting out there or a county or some group getting together and for the costs of tearing one down someplace probably isn't so insurmountable. So to be honest with you, I'm kind of okay with drawing a line here at these real small systems and probably not doing anything with them. But when it gets beyond that, two or three units, I definitely think we ought to. And I made a few notes of things that I think are important points. First of all, I think that as we move forward on every one of these, we need a full inventory of hazardous materials and explanation of what any special disposal requirements would be of those. Probably the next big question gets to be how much bond would you require? You know, it's hard to figure acreages because of all the roads and everything like that. And so it seems like a per turbine number is what's the easiest to calculate. And I don't know, I'm certainly willing to discuss any other number too, but in my mind, I'm just basing it on a concept of $100,000 per turbine or some other estimate that they provide from an approved third party, you know, someone that really does big commercial industrial type work that we can look at and see that they know what they're doing. The decommissioning proposals that we have range anywhere from $40,000 up to over $100,000. The two that are closest to current, and they're both from Bison Wind projects, the last two were at, if you divide out the number, at about $106,000 per turbine. So that's kind of where that...
Where did you get that figure from?
The last two decommissioning plans we got.
Uh-huh.
If you divide the dollar amount that they have by the number of turbines, it comes out to $106,000 per turbine for each of them.
So the plans from the projects that we just recently approved, what they submitted, not the ones we evaluated in these informal hearings.
Not these in these informal hearings, but the most recent already built wind farms that have turned in decommissioning plans. They don't turn in the decommissioning plan until after they're already built. So
right.
We don't have them for the ones that we've recently approved.
Yep.
So, I don't know, that's just the number. And
tell me again what you came up with. They estimated a ballpark total figure, and you divided it by the number of turbines?
Correct. I don't recall if they had divided it out. I had some notes on what they all were, and those two were, I had down 106,000 something. And so just for discussion purposes, mm-hmm. I figured $100,000, or if they can show from a contractor that, you know, maybe an area has them closer together, and so there's less roads and that sort of thing, or something like that, that mm-hmm. they can show that they can do it cheaper, then I'm fine with that. So then, to me, the next question is, okay, so what are we asking for financial assurances? And I sort of took this from what we do on coal mines. There's really kind of three options. There's a surety bond, which, you know, would be purchased from a third party, or a collateral bond, which is cash or a letter of credit from a financial institution, or we allow them to do a self bond or a corporate bond. In the case of the self bonding with the mines, we only, I believe, let them do 90% of it. So there'd be someone else with a little cash coming in early on if it were necessary. We require at least an A rating from Moody's or S&P. Anything below that would be a lower medium grade. So I think that's reasonable. And then in my notes, I just said that the limit of 90% self-bonding and the bond ratings probably wouldn't apply to wind farms with fewer than 6 turbines or 6 megawatts. And that gets back to my initial point about those single or doubles or even up to 6. Because first of all, they may not have a bond rating. That's why I would exclude them from the bond rating requirements. And secondly, they're so small. I think then we should reconsider the decommissioning costs about every 5 years or so. If we get into a high inflation time period, we may want to reevaluate these. And when it comes time, if one of these ever needs to be reclaimed by the state, I'm thinking, like, you know, they'd get half of it back when the, or not by the state, but by them, they would get half of their bond back when they've removed the facilities, and the other half back when the land, whoever owns the land at that time, approves the reclamation.
Let me ask you this question, Randy. Is I'm following all your dialogue, and I don't know that I disagree with really any of it, but I'm also trying to track through, unless we need Ryan or Jerry to jump in, is we've got 4 cases in front of us. And so whatever we do on each case needs to be based on that case and a record developed. So we're kind of merging the work session together, just so maybe it is better we go line by line to each case number. The first one is the two basin turbines. The next ones are the two FPL turbines. So I'm wondering, you're talking good holistic thoughts for what you believe, but we still would have to go through, I believe, the Minot Wind project from basin, two turbines. Do we want any more, yes or no? And if we do, then we do something. If not, then we don't. And so what I think I heard you say is that in these two, in the cases in front of us, the basin and the Minn Kota one, you weren't particularly concerned about anything other than what they've already submitted. Right. Am I reaching too far from what you said?
You're very close, and I can kind of go probably either way on this because they are so small and individual. But either we could take a leap of faith and just let them all off the hook, those singles and doubles like that. Or the other part of it was when I got into, like, the bonding levels and that, perhaps we could just let them do a self-bond on it for 100%. And, well, both those two would probably have corporate bond ratings, so that wouldn't be an exception. But so I'd be willing to either, I guess, if you both thought that they should just be completely let off the hook, I wouldn't get too shook up about it.
I don't know if I agree with that term, let off the hook, though, Commissioner.
Well, as far as providing financial assurance. I'm not talking about letting them off the hook as far as reclaiming, but as far as providing financial assurances.
Well, for the two up by Minot, the company kind of, I felt that they proposed adding those into the larger project, and I would suggest we go along with that and just merge those into their larger project up there and include that in the decommissioning of that larger project.
And that would be a good time to do it, but that's 4 or 5 years away if we...
Well, but we could make that their decommissioning plan now is, you know, they'll be merged in with this other project and considered in the whole of that.
That is a good approach, I think.
So, and then as far as the other single towers, I like your approach of going with the bond that the company has, you know, the self-bonded through the company, corporate bond or corporate assurance. Clearly we need to set up a overall approach, which I think you've laid out. It's very consistent with what I walked away from those hearings as well, feeling that the financial assurances is the one big thing that we need to put into place. Otherwise, I've felt fairly comfortable with what the companies had done in terms of their plans for decommissioning and what they've outlined. And then from there, once we come up with a bigger approach, then it's a matter of implementing that on a case-by-case basis with each project. And I don't know if you're proposing a standard cost per turbine that we use on every project or going with each project, but I would rather tailor it to the project in terms of what we use for the cost of decommissioning, not set up like $100,000 as this is what we use, because I think it varies quite a bit based on how far apart the turbines are located and, you know, the crane costs and that sort of thing. And the plans we saw in these four projects were much closer to the $40,000 per turbine, it seemed like to me, 40 to 50 versus 100. So I guess I'd prefer to go with a project-by-project basis, establishing what the costs are and then requiring the financial assurance from there.
So my question would be where I kind of like the idea of just having a base unless they show that it's something different. Mm-hmm. If we don't have that, what will be our base for making sure that what they're showing is reasonable? Is it just whatever they tell us, or do we want them to each go out and get a third-party contractor that gets some kind of approval or something? I don't know even really where you get that, to tell you the truth, because I don't know of any that have been torn down that are in the size ballpark we're talking about with these farms we have here.
They went through fairly detailed costs I thought, in their plans in terms of what the cranes would cost, how many days they'd be using them, you know, how much money they could expect to get from the steel. So it seems more fair to me to base it on what their actual estimated costs are for reclaiming it.
Can I just ask, interject a question that might help the discussion to Jerry or Ryan, whoever wants to jump in? When an investor-owned builds a gas peaking plant, when it comes time to take it apart, they'll come back to us for a rate for some kind to take that apart, correct? The decommissioning plant for investor-owned, correct? Whether it be a coal mine or a coal plant or a gas plant, or in the case they own a wind farm, we could never require a Otter Tail, if they owned a wind farm, to do anything until they came back to us towards the end. That's the way I understand it.
I think that there should have been a negative salvage value built into their depreciation rates. And so when they tear the thing down, the cost of removing it should have been paid already all along in your existing rates by the customers that are using it into the depreciation accounts.
But we've seen cases that have come back in front of the commission even since I've been here to decommission an energy generation facility, not a wind farm, but something else.
We had some cleanup stuff in Grand Forks from some old abandoned gas plants or something like that, there was some problems that had some significant cleanup costs. I think some soil had to be removed and replaced and stuff from contaminations. I don't recall just exactly what the deal was there, but it seemed like those were old plants from long ago that had been sitting, the ground had been sitting there. And
but like this Heskett plant that we did an ADP on over here for MDU, do we know, if we ask the questions, if they built that in, that someday they have to decommission that plant that's already built in now, or they come back when this is all, someday they have to take it apart and then ask for that as a special rate?
I'm hoping that it's all covered and they won't have to do that, but if it comes to more than they've got set aside for it, they might be coming in to talk to us.
I was just thinking about that broader discussion about decommissioning of all energy generation facilities, because we'll have companies that will regulate that'll have wind farms, or that have wind farms they own. And I want to think about this. I don't think we're going to solve this today in 50 minutes, but I think we could solve it very quickly if we wanted to go down that road, but I think it's a broader discussion of what we're going to do with wind in the state and how we're going to keep it fair across the board.
Isn't there an argument to be made that even though there's a difference between, these are more similar to a power plant when it comes to actually generating some power, but when it comes to the footprint on the state, the wind farm is really more similar to the mine than it is to the power plant. You know, if a power plant doesn't get reclaimed, and there's one at Beulah that got partially reclaimed, but I mean there's still concrete and a mess there and stuff. I don't know really why that happened the way it did, but you're talking a few acres, or in the case of the new big ones, you know, maybe you're talking about 100 acres. But this is more like the mines. We must have, I don't know, 150,000 acres of wind farms already in the state. I just, on the way over, I looked at one of the proposals that's in front of us for not a huge wind farm, and it's 12,700 acres. That's why I think this is more like mines, where there's tens of thousands of acres, and why I think that's a more apt comparison.
I don't disagree with that. I'm just thinking of even the broader argument of transmission 345 kV lines are as big as wind turbines. And so they have to someday be recovered too. And so they take up arguably as much space as wind turbines. And so there's a difference there. Granted, they're not independently owned right now. We don't have any independent transmission producers in the state. But we could though, right, Jerry? If someone, I mean, there's that could be something that we cross that bridge too. So I don't disagree with you that I think they have to have some kind of assurances. I just don't want to leap too quick till we know what we might be getting into.
Well, when you talk about the transmission lines, we did, that was part of the XL rate case, was the depreciation costs of transmission lines in particular. And they stated in there that they charged customers for those in the front end. And they don't save the money in account, but it's, there's an accounting mechanism to keep track of how much has been paid for.
And there was discussion in that case about whether or not they just replace the lines. They don't ever get rid of them.
Right.
So, I mean, as the poles get rotten, they put new poles in the ground.
The other issue that came up in our informals was the obligation that the companies are under to the, each of the easement holders for reclamation. And I think they spoke pretty clearly that they are legally obligated to reclaim them for as part of their easements. So how does that factor in here in terms of what we require to them additionally?
Well, I guess that everything's great if they, if it works for them. But if they end up going belly up, I don't see how they can honor their commitments.
Mm-hmm. So this would be a protection in place to make sure that they are able to keep the commitments on their easements as well.
Yeah. So that kind of brings the question of the company's financial stability and as a judgment item. And that's where the talk about the A rating is mm-hmm. is helpful. But and we had discussions before about if it's a regulated utility, well, then we control what they spend their money on. If it's a cooperative, it's not regulated, but there's a pretty good chance they're not going belly up.
Mm-hmm.
I would mention Randy, some of his turbines he was counting are below the half megawatt limit, so they're non-jurisdictional for the...
On the single and...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought there wasn't too small a size for decommissioning. But you're saying it is half a megawatt?
I think we said commercial
okay.
scale, and those were private scale.
So don't worry about Harold Troutman's lines over there in his
yeah.
farm. Okay.
I don't remember the exact thing in the rule, but...
Oh, yeah, I see some of these on the tribal ones are like a tenth of a megawatt.
Yeah.
We wouldn't have any jurisdiction on the tribal ground, though, at all, though. That, when you said that, I thought of that. But anything on tribal ground, I don't think we'd have any jurisdiction on.
It would be a discussion.
But, you know, the Lake Region State College one, that's
right.
1.6, but it's one tower.
And it's... Is it the state then that owns it? I mean, Lake Region?
Lake Region would be jurisdictional. Is that on tribal land? I don't even know.
No, it's, I've been out there before.
It's right up by the college.
Yeah, just north
okay.
of the college.
The college is not tribal.
But I don't think those are the big
right.
problem that I foresee the state having someday.
Well, I think. We'll have to think about this. I think. But back to the whose portfolio it is, I wonder if this would, that's a question that part of me thinks that this would be Commissioner Fedorchak's portfolio. If you've got electricity generation and rate cases, it seems like this would fall nicely into that. But I just, it wouldn't, I can't think of it falling into the ones that I have for siting, ADPs. But I don't know, I just opened
well,
that. Just,
it seems more
could be reclamation
could be a
siting,
too. Could be a siting issue in terms of that's when we do the yeah. we require the plans. I thought of it more of as a siting issue, but
okay.
I mean, it could be included in the electric too. I hadn't thought of it that way.
Well, but what Randy, what you're asking is, are you asking that the things, the inventory of hazmat and all those things would be required when they're sited or at the 10-year mark?
Well, at this point, we have in our rules that we're talking about at the 10-year mark, and so until we change our rules, mm-hmm. I guess this is what we have in front of us. And so in these four cases, like I said, I look at the Minn Kota and Basin ones differently than the other two. But at this point, it would just be those two because they're outside of the 10-year line now. However, I do think then at some point we need to redo our rules too. For one thing, the bonding calls for a lower level of bonding than what I'm talking about here. And for another thing, I think we ought to just start doing this at the point of siting them in the first place. Instead of what, you know, I remember not all of the discussion, but certainly some of it when this came about that the legislature said, let's have the experts at the Public Service Commission take care of this. You know, the side that did not want to do anything with bonding, a lot of the argument was, we have a new novel industry here. You know, we got to kind of let them get started and get their foot in the door to see how well this is going to work and whether we can really produce wind on a commercial scale and make it work. Well, now we're, you know, almost a decade later and we have almost 1,000 of these around the state and, you know, based on the models that we have with the production tax credit and those things, clearly they can. And so I think they've had that opportunity, and I think part of that opportunity was the 10 years of getting established before they'd have that extra financial burden. But I think at some point we need to redo those rules as well.
Jerry, were you must have been involved in the development of this rule. Why was the bond levels set at BAA? By Moody's Investor Service or BBB as issued by Standards and Poor's. How are those set?
You're getting that out of a rule?
Yep.
Which rule?
6909-0908.
For our decommissioning, mm-hmm. we had a bond level in there?
Mm-hmm.
I have to see the rule. I wasn't remembering that. the rules that went in, it was negotiated, all of the stuff in there kind of with the parties and with the commission and I think the BAA was thought to be a reasonable rating. I'm trying to remember if we didn't have a BAA on some of our utilities or something at that point even.
Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily opposed to changing it and making it consistent with what we're asking of other things, industries that we regulate, but I'd like to better understand what BAA and BBB, what kind of assurance those provide and why we'd change the rule to make it higher.
Probably a compromise, huh?
And what would it mean to the companies? I mean, is that a hard rating to achieve? Is this something they already achieve on a regular basis anyway? Is it a lot more costly? I mean, whatever it is, and if it provides a lot more assurance to have a higher rating, what?
I'll tell you where I got the A's
mm-hmm.
was A because of what we have on the coal, and then B, and I'm not even sure they printed this out from somewhere, so it's as honest as the internet. But there's a line.
Everything is true on the internet, isn't it?
There appears to be a line there that once it goes from A3 down to BAA1, or also on the S&P from A- down to BBB+, that's the same line in between those, is the difference between upper medium grade and lower medium grade. Mm-hmm. I just thought that seems like, since that's where we're at with the coal, and that seemed like a reasonable place to be. Mm-hmm. But if we're going to do mediums, we'd want upper mediums.
Okie doke.
So really it comes down to what we want to require for financial assurance. Seems like that's just where we're at.
I wouldn't disagree with that. I, Randy, you brought up, you know, inventory of hazardous material and all that. I don't think I'm there because we wouldn't require that of other facilities. We just require they put up financial assurances and they take them down with whatever comes in there. If we start getting in to ask one industry to provide this, it seems like why wouldn't we ask that of every industry? That's the part where I think that financial assurances, I think that makes sense. But having full inventories of things, I don't know that that would be appropriate.
Do we require that out at the mines?
I'm not sure what we require on other things we bond. You know, when we, now I'm going from we as the commission with the mines to we as a state with landfills or, you know, oil-related things. I'm not sure on that. The reason, I guess what I had in my mind when I said it was, you know, if we need to go in and do a reclamation job, it's nice to have a start when you're looking for a contractor of what they're facing here. And, you know, if that's a big unknown, it makes everything a lot harder.
I would say if we do that in the coal mines, then that would be appropriate. But if we don't, then I don't think it'd be appropriate here. That's a question we could probably figure out pretty quick. I think that whole question about what the bond rating is and how we'd make apples to apples with what we do for reclamation for coal, we do for wind. But it does then also the follow-up of this, too.
Yeah, I was just looking at that rule, and it says a BAA for Moody's and a BBB for Standard & Poor's. And so now I kind of recall a little bit of there were discussions among the people in there on that, and I think there was something about the way they issued their ratings that BBB and BAA were equivalent.
To each other.
Yeah, but I don't remember the details on it.
How do we get to the bottom of what's the appropriate rating? I mean, is that a legal question?
I guess it is, but it seems to me we've already got a rule here that talks about these ratings required for self-bonding. And we almost have to go by the rule.
I guess I'm comfortable with that unless Randy can provide more data to suggest why we should have a higher one. And we should try to dig up how we landed at this back when this was developed.
Well, that would be my first question. If we can find any, would there be minutes or any old notes or something like that, if there was a reason or if we just picked one at that time.
And we can dig in that old case if we got it around here and see if there's something in there.
Well, these were just created in 08, so okay. It must not be too hard to figure that out. I mean, some of you might be able to sit down over lunch and just try to remember what the discussion was, too.
If it was 08, we should still have the documents in case lit or in order lib.
And it's not like I came up with something that is clear and a really defensible line that it has to be at that level either.
That's why if we're going to change it, we should have a reason.
Various bonds and stuff.
That's the biggest question is the reasonableness.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that Randy's approach that he outlined, if we wanted to use that, should probably be a rulemaking. If you want to set a rate per turbine type thing and require a bond all the time, it seems like this rule should be changed.
Well, I rather like some of what this rule says. I just don't know that it's being enforced, and so now it comes time to enforce it. right? Because we haven't asked for any of this stuff yet.
It puts you in a position of having to judge whether or not a company needs some sort of a performance bond.
So it outlines all kinds of options that they can provide and we can request, and we get to determine what's acceptable. So we have to determine what's acceptable. That's
And maybe none is the way the rule's written.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, and just to take a direct point, though, on the case number PU13794, the way I read it is, they believe, the company, that the total decommissioning plan is $2.2 million. And so if we take the data that they say is correct, if we were to require a surety, it would be for $2.2 million. I mean, that's, I think, the way I would prefer to take each case on its own merit than to try to pick a number, because the turbines are going to change so much. The where they're located could change so much. The price of things as they change. I just think that we'd want to, you know, the companies, they put their information in there. Either we accept it. If we don't believe it's correct, we should ask them to refine it. If they give us the information, the informal, we believe the information is accurate, then we make a determination, do we require something for $2.2 million or not?
Was that their, I don't have that in my folder, was that their decommissioning plan that they filed after this rule went into effect?
Well, this is the January 31st, 2014 one that I'm looking at. So they would have, Exhibit A kind of walks through a whole bunch of different things, but at the end of the day, the way I read this is that they determined $2.2 million to decommission the site, roughly $82,000 per turbine. So that's the real question, is do we accept that? Yes or no. If we do, if we want assurances, then we would, the most you could require would be that $2.2 million. I just think that would be the way to approach it, if we're going to do that. Or if we don't agree with the numbers, we should go back case by case and say what we don't agree with the numbers. Wouldn't that, I'm looking at thinking of the attorney now, but as a record, when you develop it, you'd have to have a record develop why you picked something for this case.
Right. And go back again to the reasonableness, we'd have to have some sort of evidentiary basis for why we disagree with the $82,000 per turbine on that particular case.
Or we agree with it and say, okay, great, but we'd like, now that the 10 years is up, we'd like you to provide some assurances that you have that ability to take these down. And that seems very reasonable. And then we figure out what whether it's the AA or the AAA, what exactly that means. And then, Jerry, have you talked to the industry, if you will, and to see what their thoughts are about this, what happens in other states that have more mature wind industries, what kind of things they provide in different areas?
The states, you know, we sent the survey out before a little bit, and I think we got a variety of response back that the states were doing. Some of them were requiring a decommissioning bond right up front with the siting process, and others weren't requiring anything at all.
We've been asking this question at our hearings, and none of the companies have balked at providing a bond or any sort of assurance for decommissioning, and nor did they in our informals either. So if that's indication, which, I mean, we've asked them directly ourselves, I don't think they're going to have a big problem with it. We've already laid this out. This, if I'm remembering correctly, our rules follow what Minnesota's doing based on what our in Austin did that research this summer.
Okay, I'd have to check.
I think that our rules mimic Minnesota's pretty closely.
I think you're right on that.
And then for the larger discussion, Randy, if you want to advance the discussion about changing the rules and doing it in the front end, that's certainly your purview to do that, and we can see where it goes. But I think the near term is, I'm comfortable with the company's numbers they give us. I really am. And I'm comfortable with some type of surety bond. I just don't know what is the best way to do that.
It says in the rules that we would require by order that they provide us with this whatever and sort of assurance that is outlined here. And I don't know if we want to dictate what it is or give them the option of using any of these that are outlined in the rule.
For the coal facilities, I think we give them the option to bring back what they want. And that they, because they, we've had discussions whether we'll accept one thing or the other. Randy, you're feverishly looking for something over there. No?
No.
No? Okay.
There, you know, there is some merit, I think, to, if you're going to require it, to ask them what they prefer. Ask them to propose something.
Of the various bond options?
Yeah.
Well, I think... No, which one of you did just say that with the mines we allow them to...
That's what I believe.
...determine it, and I think that that's...
And they've had cases where they've asked us to do something out of the ordinary, and we've had to vote on that yes or no and whether we accept something. So we give them the first bite of what they would like to do to answer our requirement, and if we think it's appropriate, we accept it. If we they don't, then we say no.
And if they don't want a corporate bond on their books and prefer to go out and buy a bond, I don't know why one way would bother us over the other. I believe the 90% limit on with the mines on corporate bonds has to do with if there was a problem, is there some outside... other third party where some money could be gotten quickly to start the process and get things going, which is why they require, I believe, at least 10% of it be from an outside source.
Are you using the term corporate bond the same as corporate guarantee? Is that, or is corporate bond something separate?
No.
Corporate guarantee where they basically say...
Self bond.
Yeah, okay, okay. So, yeah. Well, I think we should... look into the B, you know, how do we land at the rating that we're at and establish that we're comfortable with that. And if not, we have to pick a different rating because we can't really move forward until we do that. And then we can go to the companies and say, you know, we're going to, I think we should require it personally. I think
we're all
we should require it and then ask them to submit to us what they would like to provide in terms of financial assurance. And then we can write an order accordingly.
So you think that we let them calculate out the costs of decommissioning?
I'm comfortable with that too. I think it's going to be more flexible long term. It's going to be more current, you know, and I like your idea of 5 years every looking at it. But if we set it in place now, I mean, these costs are going to change over time. So we could be either way too high or way too low for the next, you know, wind farms. So I just think it will be more relative to the project and more appropriate for that project if we do it on a project-by-project basis based on their costs.
So you don't think it should be revisited?
I do. I think we should.
Because I think, you know, with inflation, with renting equipment and stuff like that, I do think there has to be some intervals built in.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
Well, I agree with that, definitely looking at it. But I could even go the other extreme and say 10 years, you know what, I'm not worried about any of these wind farms breaking down at 10 years. You come back and look at this thing again 5 years from now. Because the chances of these wind farms breaking down in the next 5 years I don't think is very high. So, I'm not against going the bond now, but I could go the other way to say these are all going to be operational for at least 10 more years. But I think it's better to send a signal to the companies now than to continue to steamroll that out so they can build it in there. Ryan, could you also dig around a little bit and see who else would have access to these? Like, who could take a bite out of this assurances? You know, just like the
as
same.
As far as, like, if the company goes belly up, any other creditors or...
Gotcha. Because that's a number that could change the amount of the bond. Because isn't that the same exact problem we have with grain elevators?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we get caught into the who's going to take what and what assets people go after.
Yep, I can look into that.
Okay. All right. So did we resolve that the first case, the first with the Basin Electric, I think that would be PU 13793, we're fine with where they're at right now. We would accept that, and we want to revisit that at some point in time?
I think with that with sending the message that those would probably get rolled into their other Ward County wind farm when that, whenever we decide to work on that.
Can we take, do we need to take any official action to make that, you know, legit, officially roll those project, those turbines into that larger project?
Yeah, I don't know what records. We would do. Ryan? Yeah.
Trying to think here, too.
Well, you could just acknowledge we received a decommissioning plan. We concur with your assessment that this is best decommissioned as a part of the larger, whatever they referenced in there. And
at this time, the commission takes no action on.
But we set the stage that we've given them that we agree with what they asked for in that informal.
So do you want to actually do something?
I think so. I mean, if they've taken the time to give us the paperwork, we've done the informal. They know what the deal is with those two turbines from as far as our viewpoint at this point in time. Unless I'm missing it.
So we're going to look at that as part of, I can't remember what you call their other wind farm.
Yeah. Wally and Willie become part of the larger Souris Valley Wind Project or whatever that project is.
Trying to picture what kind of a document or action we would take.
I'm wondering, too.
And
could we just follow up with the letter to theirs, the decommissioning plan?
We'll let you guys figure that out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Keep it simple.
And, now, you know, Minn Kota was kind of in the same boat. And they had these two small turbines sitting by themselves out there. And it seems like if they had trouble with the turbine, one or two of them, that they would leave it until they had a reason to bring the crane in for something else and take care of it at that time. I'm just thinking out loud here that, you know, we have kind of an issue with our rule in that it says that after a period of time that they'll remove it.
Mm-hmm. After a certain number of months.
Yeah, whereas in reality, it's not practical to bring that crane in here for one turbine. They're going to do the whole project at once. If they get a turbine that goes down, it'll sit there until the rest of the project is ready to be dismantled. And so.
But those two particular wind farms, Jerry, they're in the middle of nowhere and there's nothing even close that's going to have a crane come out and they can just run it down the road a half mile.
And those,
the one in Petersburg and the one by Valley City, they're a long way from everything.
Yeah, but at the same time, I think that Minn Kota invested in some turbines, Ashtabula and maybe Langdon, if they, I can't remember if they just had a purchase agreement or if they actually bought some of the turbines, but I think they've got other turbines around.
Well,
they could combine the jobs with.
I would partially, I guess my attitude would be different, because recognizing we don't regulate them, and I just said I wouldn't get too caught up in whether or not we even force them to bond when there's only, if you count this as one or two. But if those things become unused and they've sat there for years and they're, you know, crumbling down and just sitting there doing nothing, and Minn Kota's response was that, well, but we have another wind farm wherever in Minnesota or wherever, and we're not going to do anything with these until that one's shot, I would be very unhappy with that kind of a response.
That's why I think each one is so different. That the first ones, I'd buy into the roll into the larger farm decommissioning because they're adjacent to each other. But for the Minn Kota one, I think that's where we would have to say just what Randy said, is that we, you know, at this point in time, we do not require any financial assurances, but we would encourage you that when they're no longer producing power according to the rules, you must take it down. And we'll revisit this at some point at, you know, the same 5-year window or something, but
yeah, because those are located intentionally in the high traffic areas.
Minn Kota said those were designed to be billboards, is what I wrote down for.
It was an experimental thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a PR. Get people intrigued by windmills.
But no, if somebody's not, if they're not producing electricity, we'll make the, I would make them go back and take them down. That's the point, because that we could do that.
Well, and they may find a way to share that crane with somebody else or something too at the time. And
but let's do that, Jerry. That same kind of, that'll be our answer to Minn Kota, kind of summarize what you heard the three of us say. And then what we're stuck with, the way I see it, is the two FPL cases of the questions that we all asked about the bonds and ask the company what they would prefer to for their financial assurance. Ryan to scare up some of those legal answers for us on who has access to it. And then just reschedule this for, we'll put it in scheduling for Wednesday for the next one of these. Mm-hmm. That sounds okay to you too.
Does.
It does. I just want to throw this out. And, you know, it looks like FPL's estimates here are reasonable. Over the course of years, somebody here is always going to have to look at those numbers. I mean, if it Absolutely. Becomes the clear policy that whatever numbers they turn in is what the financial assurances are going to be required, and so they come back and say, well, it's going to cost $100. I mean, that jumps out as wrong.
Right.
You know, so we'll need to always, I guess, be having staff compare them or something as we...
Well,
and multiples, but this does look like reasonable numbers.
And then in terms of the revisiting in 5 years or whatever, can we just include that in the order? Is that something that we need to create a new rule for? Or?
I don't think we need to create a new rule if we put that in the order, that we're going to revisit this in 5 years. Everyone's been given notice, and we just revisit in 5 years. And
yeah.
Yeah, and to Randy's question about the numbers, I think the more of these that come in, we're going to be able to look and compare. And Company A says the value of something is $110,000, and somebody Company B says it's $400,000. Then you start getting a better database of what they think these costs should be. Just like Jim and those guys are so good at predicting what the costs are going to be because they've got so much experience in what it's going to be to reclaim X amount of land. I think we'll get those numbers.
I want to ask a question. I guess I was just being agreeable, and then later on I got to thinking, well, what are we doing here? With asking the questions, the question of the company, of their preference between surety bond or collateral bond or self-bonding, was that what you had kind of assigned Jerry to?
Well, I think to have them inside the provision of our own rules, what they would prefer. We've heard the commission, I think, is agreeing that we take their numbers and what they say it costs to decommission, them pick within the rule framework what they would prefer to be the best way to guarantee that, and let them decide, so rather than us dictate.
But we wouldn't – would we ask them and they pick one, and then we put that in the order that that's what it would have to be? Or I guess I was thinking more that we would pick a number, and they have to come up with that number, and they can – we can be whatever of those things they want or any combination of them. I think it seems to me they should be deciding after we set the requirement.
Right.
Which whatever they want to us.
Well, the requirement would be based on
not
their
estimate.
Not that
we find out which they want to do and include that in an order, because if the cost is, you know, $600,000 and they put down a surety bond now and buy it, and in a year or two, they don't want to keep up with that expense and want to do a corporate guarantee, I'm fine with that. They can, as long as we continue to hold that total amount of financial assurances. So I don't really think that should be in any kind of an order. But it has to be.
So I was
a specific one.
Thinking that we would just order them to file for commission approval.
Yep.
Of financial. Whatever term we dig out of the rule here, financial assurance, and let them under this rule and let them see what they file.
Yeah, I think we all said the same thing. We just need to clarify it.
Yeah.
Because they've already given us the number. And I think
so I'll put a number in there.
Well, the number is based on what they file.
Yeah.
That's
financial assurances for $82,000. Per turbine or whatever the...
I'd prefer the overall
point,
number.
Whatever the overall
so
number.
Per turbine.
Yeah.
Because there's other costs.
Without the salvage value subtracted off?
Yes.
Total cost. Because that's the numbers that That's the worst case scenario, the way you would read that. And then you had the information. So the ones for the Minot Wind Farm, do we all agree that they can roll those into the other larger farm?
Yep.
And then for the Minn Kota letter, that we're fine with what they have going now, but reinforce that they need to follow through and take them down if they no longer produce electricity.
According to whatever rule that is, there's okay. a certain number of months, and then I think they have a year from that time to do it.
Okay. All right. Going once, going twice, Commissioner? Randy? We'll schedule another work session on Wednesday for this.
In 2 days from now, you mean?
We'll schedule it.
Okay.
In 2 days from now. I don't know what it'll be.
Yeah.
Okay, Commissioner Dorchak?
I don't have anything more.
All right. Jerry, Ryan, anything that left hanging out there? Okay, I don't even think we need a work session for the Basin one and the Minn Kota. Those, I think you got the guidance in those. You can get those drafted up.
Well, what I had kind of thought is you'd stick that work session out a little ways, and I'll try to bring an order that resolves the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
For each one of those.
I'll put all of four of them in one order with the four cases mm-hmm. captioned on top. And then say what each is doing. Minn Kota's is, and I'm just thinking out loud here on how to do this. Minn Kota and Basin's nothing. FPL will file financial assurances in accordance with the rule.
I think they're different enough that they ought to be either three or four orders. I'm not so concerned about the companies having two projects in one order.
Let's break them into four different orders, Jer. And then that way, in the future, if these companies trade and buy and sell and the wind assets, then you're not locked into these massive orders. It's just more motions for us to go through.
Okay.
Yeah.
And another question that shouldn't take too long to answer. In these cases that we'll come to in the future, FPL, you have the owner listed as FPL/Basin Electric or FPL/Otter Tail. Who are we dealing with? Does that mean that it was a purchase power thing and so the power was purchased? Or does that mean the ownership of the facility changed hands and we're dealing with the second one?
I think it meant that Otter Tail or Basin was buying the energy from the project, and it's owned by FPL. They built it for Otter Tail. There are a couple of cases where Otter Tail actually bought turbines.
We do know exactly who owns all of these facilities that we're assessing the right people, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, we do know that. But that was the point of why it could change in the future. Okay, let's go ahead and close the work session today on case numbers PU 13793, 794, 795, 796. Thank you all.